okay. Now, in this study, Randy Ingermanson not only came out with this great report, I got a chance to call him on the phone yesterday and talk with him, and the results are unbelievable. Allowing for statistical plus or minus, how many would stand up when you said, how many of you are Jesus and you have a father named Joseph? Now, think of a number in your head before I give this. I mean, would there be 10? Would there be 20? Would there be 30? How many Jesuses with Joseph for a father? The figure in Jerusalem alone during the time of the ossuaries, over 1,000. Over 1,000 Jesuses have Josephs for a father. Over 1,000. So Ingermanson takes the statistics and he works them out, and I'll tell you the results ahead of time. His guess is that there is virtually no chance that the family, the Talpiatum, is the Jesus family, and there's some really persuasive things he goes after here. But he ends his article by saying there's a 10,000 to 1 chance that the Jesus in the Talpiatum is the Jesus of the Holy Family. 10,000 to 1 chance. Now, as a statistician, he comes in and says, hey, look, the way they ran the statistics in the program just really doesn't help you. Now, he calls Mattia a wash, and there are reasons for that. But the key statistic in this tomb for Randy is the name Judah, son of Jesus. And he does a study, an historical, he teams up here with some folks, and they do a historical argument. What are the chances that Jesus could have had a son named Judah? And they talk about the fact that Jesus' brother James becomes the pastor of the church in Jerusalem. When he dies, the reins are passed on to the brother Simon, and there's no mention of Jesus' son anywhere, either in the literature or a wife or taking over in the church or a prominent name or a shrine, a tomb, which is worshipped. Nothing like that. So he says you have to write into the statistics here a not Jesus factor. A Jesus factor would be Mary, Joseph, Jesus. But a not Jesus factor would be, instead of saying, oh, this fellow's name is Judah, son of Jesus. Well, what do you know? Jesus must have been married and had a son. We don't have a lick of evidence. Now, more about this in a minute, about mothers and sons. But his point is the Judah, son of Jesus, is a huge argument against this being the Holy Family because no source links them. But I want to come back to that. So in the first thing, these common names, my first two points is that Joseph and Jesus are so common in the first century that possibly there would be 1,000 plus or minus 900 and something to 1,100 and something with the statistics, but approximately 1,000 couples over an 80-year period where the son is named Jesus and the father is Joseph. No problem. Mary is a mother. Well, you're only picking the most common or second most common name. And besides, here's the key. The third point is the DNA. I told you the first argument was the cluster argument. Nothing there. Nothing there. Stephen Fan, by the way, just came out with a statistical study as well. He emailed it to us just yesterday and also goes after these names. The cluster is a nothing argument. What do you do with the fact that the Mount of Olives tomb has this almost the same cluster of names, and we're supposed to think that this is just one of all of them. All right, the second argument was, yes, but we have the DNA. What did the DNA show? Well, the DNA established not one positive link in the tomb, not a single positive link in the tomb. The only two ossuaries that they could check here are the ossuary of Jesus, son of Joseph, and the woman who has been called Mariamne until just recently. And all it showed is that they had no DNA match regarding their mothers. No mitochondrial DNA. This is not a nuclear DNA test. It was a mitochondrial DNA looking for the link of a mother, and there is none. And, of course, right away the evidence says nothing. The report went something like this. Well, if this Mary Imdy is not the mother, she must have been the wife. And there are few more outlandish comments in this whole discussion than if we have an extended family tomb, cousins, uncles, brothers, sisters, and then, that's longitudinally, then if we go latitudinally for 4 to 5 generations, you just pick any male and any female and say if they're not related by mitochondrial DNA, therefore they must be husband and wife? I mean, what about the aunt, your great aunt, who died 40 years ago and you never met her? Or some have said, since the name identified as Mary Imdy is in Greek, that this is not uncommon in tombs, but maybe she's a non-Jew. Maybe she is a loved servant. Or maybe some children down the street, their parents died, and they were adopted into the family. I mean, this can happen, and they would be buried together. But there's no way to take a person and say, we don't have the same mother in common. We could still have the same father in common. But since we don't have the same mother in common, must be his wife. No way. The DNA did not have a positive match. Let's move on. The statistical comparison to Jesus. All right, I've already talked about the name pooling and the fact that there would be as many as 1,000 Jesuses in Jerusalem over the period of the ossuaries, where Jesus would stand up and say, that every one of those Jesuses, 1,000 of them, would stand up and say, my father's Joseph. It was just that common. But how do we get from the Talpiot family to the Holy Family? Well, in the Discovery Channel, the 600-to-1 odds was largely because of so-called Mary Imdy. And they argued, this is Mary Magdalene. This is Mary Magdalene. Now, let me just put that on hold for 1 second. That's my fourth point, the statistical comparison. But let me make a few other comments. I'll come back to number four. My fifth point on my website, GaryHabermas.com. The fifth point there is that there is no early tomb connection between Mary and Jesus, Mary Magdalene and Jesus, no early tomb connection, and no historical connection, two separate points, no historical connection between Mary Magdalene and Jesus as far as husband and wife, none. I mean, we think after the Da Vinci argument, I think we have this vague feeling that there were some books in the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th centuries that said Jesus was married. No book clearly says Jesus was married. We just don't have that. So there's no historical connection here. And sixthly, there's no historical evidence that Jesus was married to Mary. They're not associated in that way, but that they hadn't, there's no argument that they had children. All right. So no connection between Mary and Jesus regarding husband and wife, and no connection between Jesus and a child. Okay, so let's go back to my statistical argument. What made the Discovery Channel get a lot of attention, I've already noted, the grouping of names, not an issue, 1,000 Jesuses with Father Joseph. Secondly, DNA argument, but there was no positive DNA evidence whatsoever, none. Okay, but could it be that the names in the tomb would be connected to the Holy Family? The way they got that was to play on the name Mary Imdy and say this is probably Mary Magdalene. There's no way to connect this to Mary Magdalene. Now, it's a 4th century source that uses the name or a similar name, Mary Imdy. And the argument is, see, that's Mary Magdalene. Okay, let me tell you the problems. First of all, it's 4th century. 4th century. That means a minimum of approximately 300 years after Jesus. Maybe it's 330 A.D. Jesus dies about 30 A.D. 300 years difference. That's not history. That's too late. I'm not saying nobody would be right from that distance. I mean, arguably the best biography we have of Alexander the Great is that of Plutarch, and that's from about 300 years later. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. But if that's your only conclusion, that's your only source, that's a super problem. Let me give you a second super problem. In the text, Mary Imdy is not even clearly Mary Magdalene. She's not identified exclusively with Mary Magdalene. All right, well, now one of the comebacks is we can do better than that. We can get the name back from 330, 350, back to about 300 A.D. Well, guess what? Number one, that's 270 years after Jesus. And if that's going to be, you know, that's just not good history. And secondly, once again, Mariamne's not connected to Mary. So no one's asking when does the name show up. The question is this Mary Magdalene? And there's no historical connection that Jesus and Mary were married. There's no historical argument that Jesus had children. None from these sources. And no way to get Mary Magdalene out of the womb at the tomb. Now, just yesterday, Randy Phan has come out with an argument. He is the president of the Holy Land, the University of the Holy Land. And he said just yesterday he has completed his study of the Mariamne ossuary, and he concludes that the name is so rare and so complicated because there are two distinct names. He does this all, shows the Greek. I have a detailed picture here in front of me, photograph. And Mariamne is two names. It's Mariamne Kai Mara. It's Mary and Martha, arguably. But at any rate, this is not, it's just not even perhaps one person in there. You just can't make the connection whatsoever. So to get Mariamne, even to get the name is a problem, but to get the name connected to Mary Magdalene is huge because there's no DNA. I mean, a huge problem. You have to get that. If you don't have the connection with Mary, the producers have said, the statistician has said, the program has said, Discovery, that if you don't get Mary hooked up, you don't have the statistics. You need it. But there's no way to even know that Mariamne is a single name, at least not right now. And there's no way to connect Mariamne to Mary Magdalene. And even if there was, there's no way to connect Mary Magdalene to Jesus. What if Mary Magdalene married some other family member? I mean, that's just a wild stretch. But what I'm saying is to try to get Jesus and Mary together cannot be done, either DNA or historically or any other way. Let me move on. John chapter 1, notwithstanding, where Jesus is talked about as the son of Joseph when he was first gathering disciples, once his disciples get together, and in the early church as well, Jesus is not known as the son of Joseph. Now, these are more minor points, but Jesus is not called the son of Joseph. And if the doctrine of the virgin birth says he's the son of Mary, that's an issue right there. You have the two genealogies and so on, but just calling him the son of Joseph is not a given. Eighth, it's a stretch to ask why should the tomb of Jesus, family tomb, the Jesus family tomb, be in Jerusalem? This should be a Nazareth tomb, family tomb, or even Bethlehem, you could imagine, if that's where Joseph's family's from. But I mean, a Nazareth makes much more sense, about a 4 days walk. But why Jerusalem? Now, someone said to me yesterday, James lived in Jerusalem, so Mary was probably close by. You have a couple people there after the cross. But we have to remember something. As I told them, we can not lose sight of the fact that this is an extended family over multi-generations. So if the Joseph family or Jesus family was in Nazareth, let's say, you don't just take all the ossuaries out and move them to Jerusalem. Just because James was there and Mary could have lived there, that doesn't account for the whole family. So Jerusalem is an odd location for this. The Talpiot tomb was costly. Some have said upper class, some have said middle class, but still costing a lot of money. That's an issue. And I might also say that the designs over the tombs are now, some have come out and said that these are not, this is not Christian graffiti. This is not Christian. It's likely some other religious or separatist sort of secretive tomb. There's sort of signs that this could not be the Jewish family, the Jesus family at all. Tenthly, we're hearing less about this these days, but the 10th ossuary was originally thought by the Discovery crew and about James. In particular, this was noised abroad even a year ago by James Tabor, the just about the only scholar who's bought some of this. He's argued that the James ossuary should belong in this tomb. But there's a very heated discussion now between Amos Kloner, the Jewish archaeologist who pulled the ossuaries out with some others, Josias, who cataloged these for the museum, and James Tabor himself. And Zias and Kloner agree, including some private emails, they have agreed that 10th ossuary was originally found, was originally measured. It's argued by Tabor and others that it's the exact measurement of the James ossuary. Well, the Jewish scholars who pulled it out and cataloged it vociferously disagree. They're kind of hot about this. If you read between the lines, or if you see them interviewed on some of the news programs, number one, they argued it was not the same size. It was a different size. Secondly, there was no name on it. It was plain. And because it was plain, it was moved into a courtyard at the museum where plain, non-ornate, non-named ossuaries go, and that the 10th is not Jesus, James. Now, of course, the connection would be to connect James to Jesus with that 10th ossuary, but there's virtually no connection, no way to connect the 10th ossuary with the James ossuary, if the James ossuary is even authentic. 11. All ancient sources tell us that the tomb in which Jesus was buried was empty just a few days later. Even the enemy attestation is that the tomb was empty. Now, somebody could say, well, yeah, but that's the point of an ossuary. The tomb would be empty when they got the bones. But see, the point is there, that would be a year or 2 years later, they would regather the bones and put them in an ossuary. The Christian proclamation is that the tomb was empty days afterwards. On the third day, Paul reports the creed of 1 Corinthians 15:3 and following. On the third day, the tomb is empty. And so there's no ossuary, no rotting body. Now, critics have said, well, what if they opened the tomb and there was a body there, but after 50 days, when the first preaching takes place, the body couldn't be recognized? Well, Mike Lacona, who's on tonight, Mike has discussed this with a pathologist. I have also discussed it with another pathologist, and they've told both of us that that's not true. A body would be recognizable after 50 days, especially a body that had been crucified. But here's the key. Here's the key. It's a moot point. Christians didn't proclaim there was a body in the tomb, but it was all messed up and we couldn't tell if it was Jesus. That's not the claim. And we do have to do justice to the earliest claims. The claim is that there was no body in the tomb. All the sources agree, friend and foe agree, that does not fit the Talpia tomb argument. And lastly, resurrection. I could spend more time on this one. Maybe somebody wants to question this. I'm going to be done in just a couple of minutes here. But the Talpia tomb does not fit the data for resurrection. Now, please understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying since the resurrection is true, Jesus has to be raised. That's not my argument. I'm not even saying since the Bible is inspired, the Talpia tomb has to be mistaken. Mike and I argue in our book, The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus, we argue a minimal facts case for the resurrection. Basically what that is I will take the data that scholars concede, friend and foe, even unbelieving, I'll take those facts, and we have a list of data that everyone concedes. By everybody, I mean, with very few exceptions, in the high 90s of agreement. And you know that by counting the scholars. It's a painstaking work. But I'll take those data, and those data alone are sufficient to tell us certain things. For example, a group of early followers of Jesus believed they saw the risen Jesus. They had experiences which they thought were appearances of the risen Jesus. You're going to have to look hard to find any scholars who will disagree with that. Well, among that group of people who said, Jesus is raised and he appeared to me, is one Saul of Tarsus, alias Paul, the Apostle Paul. It would be an issue to talk about what Paul thought he saw on the way to Damascus. But to me, an even worse problem would be to take, say, the disciples, who must have had some inklings going on here. But even a worse problem would be to take Mary. Her name appears there in the list. She saw the risen Jesus, or thought she saw the risen Jesus. But Mary, the matriarch of this family, of the Holy Family now, not necessarily Talpia tomb, we don't know what relationship that Mary had, but in the Holy Family, Jesus' family, Mary is the matriarch. If every year or so, when they bury a new ossuary in there, every 5 years, every 3 years, whatever, they put a new ossuary in there, they were not embarrassed to put Jesus, son of Joseph, on the outside of the ossuary? If you come in with friends and you want to check some of the ossuaries, you wouldn't be embarrassed to put the name Jesus there? But here's what's worse. Mary knows that the bones of her son Jesus are buried in that ossuary. And yet Mary's going to give her life for the Christian gospel and say, I believe I saw the risen Jesus. But here's the real kicker. James, the brother of Jesus, is a skeptic, as virtually all scholars agree. And James is going to be converted by what he believes is a resurrection appearance of Jesus. And every 3 years, he's going to walk into the tomb and virtually trip over the bones of his brother. His mother's going to virtually trip over the tomb, over the bones of her son. And yet they're both going to proclaim loudly that he's raised from the dead bodily, not mystically, spiritually, raised hologram. He's platonically alive in the heavens today. That's not their claim. Their claim is that he was raised bodily. And I'm just saying, I'm not assuming inspiration or resurrection. What I'm saying is the Telpia tomb claims are grossly at odds with what we know of history of the earliest Christian proclamation. If there is a Jesus family tomb that is so open that you could walk in and out of there and bury new ossuaries and doesn't mind having the name Jesus, son of Joseph, on the outside of the ossuary, then we're not keeping the same quiet. And if we're not keeping the same quiet, Christianity doesn't get off the ground. And how do you get Mary's faith? How do you get James's faith? How do you get the disciples' faith in this kind of atmosphere? How do you get Paul's faith? I'm saying the Telpia tomb is at odds with what we know of early history. On and on and on I could go, but my 45 minutes are up. Let me just say in conclusion, my conclusion is that there's absolutely no way to connect the family tomb of Talpiot, or the other one I've talked about tonight, the family tomb on the Mount of Olives with the name Jesus, or the other three or four Jesus, son of Josephs, or according to statistics, 1,000 Jesuses who have fathers who are Joseph at this time. I'm just saying the odds are so incredible, it's not even to be worth considering that the Jesus of the Talpiot tomb or one of those other 1,000 Jesuses in Jerusalem or in the Mount of Olives tomb would be the same as Jesus of Nazareth. I think that is the bottom line. There's not virtually a single redeeming argument that could tie the two families together. So with that, I will turn it back over here and ask if we have any questions.
Thank you, Gary. We appreciate that presentation. If you've joined us en route, we've been listening to Dr. Gary Habermas as he's been talking for the last 45 minutes or so about the Jesus tomb and has given us several wonderful arguments. We appreciate that presentation.